Good morning. Welcome to the Bill and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock. Rob Brovich is in the studio with me today. Gary Bell's out of town. We're here to answer your questions about any legal topic. If you have a question about a legal matter, if you have something going on with your landlord-tenant, with your family law matters, with any kind of matters that are going on in your life, give us a call. In our real lives, in our lawyer lives, we're personal injury lawyers. We handle accident and personal injury people who have been hurt in accidents. If you've been a victim of a drunk driver, somebody who's driving without paying attention, texting, if you've been a victim of somebody who's just been negligent, who hasn't quite properly controlled their car and has caused you to be hurt, we'll take care of you. You can call us at 303-795-5900 at our office. We have people there 24/7 answering the phone, getting you to a lawyer. If you need a lawyer to call you back, a lawyer will call you back right away. We have lawyers on call who get messages, and we'll call you, and the message center will make sure we take care of you. If you want to make an appointment, you can come in, you can sit down with us and talk about your legal game plan. That's what we do for you. We give you a legal game plan. We talk to you about how you want to be able to address your case, what you want to do in your case, how you want to address your injuries, and if we can help you, if you want to hire us, you can. If you don't, then good luck to you. You have your legal game plan, and we'll hopefully would have helped you through what you're going through. We do these shows. We do this show every Saturday morning to talk to you about any legal topic, any legal matters you want to do as a service. It's a call-in show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat Springs, you can call us at 970-457-1009. That's 970-457-1009. It's our interest to educate you. There's quite a few lawyers out there. I don't think you can turn on the TV anymore without having some lawyer talking to you about how you should come to them and how they want your business. That's right. We all want your business. That's something we want to do. But we want to educate you. We want to give you some idea of what's going on in the law. If you have outside problems that we don't normally deal with on our firm, we still want to help you. If we can't answer your question, we'll find somebody who can. We'll talk to you during the week. We'll look it up. We'll research it. We also do a Sunday morning show. Do a Sunday morning show that starts at 7:30 in the morning. Rob and I cut it just yesterday talking about neck injuries out of car accidents. You can listen to those at Cool 105, Mix 100.3, The Wolf 92.5. You can also listen to it at Jammin 101.5. And at Flow 107.1. Rob, how are you doing today?
Doing great. So you're saying that at 7:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings, every one of those stations plays that show that we recorded yesterday?
You got it. Five shows. We're out there talking to everybody. It's a lot of stuff that's going on. We're going to, whenever we have phone calls, we're going to go straight to the phones. And today we have a call from Martin who wants to talk about MedPay. Martin, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, good morning.
How are things up in Boulder?
Oh, I don't know. I just got up. I haven't even looked out the window yet.
First thing you did was roll out of bed and call us.
Yeah, I was hoping I'd see you outside my window.
No, I got to be in this radio station. So what can we talk to you about MedPay?
The question on MedPay, I'm kind of curious about the limits on MedPay. And I'm finding I'm running into people that have had personal injury accidents, and they had kind of low limits on their MedPay, and that got chewed up very quickly.
Right. So, Martin, tell everyone what MedPay coverage is.
Well, basically, MedPay is if you're injured or whatever bills you incur, the MedPay will take care of. But yet, if there's a settlement or any kind of a remedy about your bills, you don't have to pay the insurance back like if you did on your primary.
That's exactly right.
Well, Martin, you're on top of it. And you hit it exactly what you're talking about. We've talked about this many, many times, and we want everybody to listen.
The limit of MedPay that people carry is pretty low, and that's what kills them off.
That's right. The law only requires $5,000, and you can sign that away. So you get an insurance agent who's talking about trying to get your business and says, look how I can give you a low rate. Well, you're signing away MedPay.
And a person could always fall back on their primary if they have a primary insurance.
Exactly.
From their automobile.
But then there's co-payments, deductibles.
And subrogation.
Subrogation is what kills them off again.
Yep. That's right. And
if they get a settlement, that insurance company, the primary insurance company, can go back and say, we're going to claw back our expenses out of your settlement.
That's right. They want their money back. And then you're faced with that. And what they're saying is they want that money back in their insurance contracts, their health insurance contracts they have with you. They have the right to that subrogation. If you're working and you're working with an ERISA plan, an employee retirement and security plan, you're talking about then companies get automatic rights to get this money back. And they will come get it back.
Now, with regard to your question, it seems that different insurance companies allow different maximum amounts for MedPay coverage. I have insurance through Progressive, and the max I could get was $25,000. But I know Gary has it through USAA, and I think his daughter has $100,000.
Yeah, I think USAA will let you go up to $100,000. There is other ones that only let you go up to, I think the Hartford lets you go up to $50,000. It all depends. Martin, I don't know if you know what your MedPay is.
They're tailoring their MedPay because they just don't want to be in the hook for
right.
that much.
Because they know this much. They're going to charge you premium, and the premium is going to go up, but it's not as huge as you might think. As a matter of fact, it's a very small amount of insurance for what you're getting. But
their risk out of pocket is greater if you up your limits of MedPay.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's the game.
And what they're doing is they're turning around and giving you this money. It's without regard to fault, Martin, and that's one of the important parts, too. Another important part is it covers everybody in your car. So, you know, when you've got family members in the car, you've got other people in the car, MedPay is going to extend to other members in the car.
So it's really in the insurance company's advantage to really limit to have you have low limits of MedPay because that lessens their risk of financial exposure.
Absolutely.
If you have low limits of MedPay.
Right. You're going to pay a little bit more, but in my opinion, well worth it.
Another question regarding MedPay. If you submit your bill, say, for example, you're involved in a car accident and you start incurring dental and in other words, treatment expenses.
Right.
And you submit it to MedPay. This is kind of a loose end question, open end question. How receptive are your insurance companies, which are individually, I guess, an individual choice on the insurance companies, willing to accept your charges, the treatment charges, through MedPay?
It's been my experience that they pay quickly.
The biggest fight you get is from USAA. They've got a company called Auto Injury Solutions that will give fights about that. Most of the other MedPay companies will pay the bills without concern.
Without question.
They obviously, it's got to be a reasonable and necessary charge and usual and customary amount, and it's got to be related to the accident, but they're paying it. And they're paying it because they owe it, and they understand they pay it, and they don't get involved in the fight.
And then, as you know, Martin, I know that you know this, but if they delay or fail to pay a bill that they're responsible for, you know what that opens the door to is, you know, bad faith insurance practices.
What's the recovery on that if you have to sue under a bad faith? Is that three times?
Two times the covered benefit plus attorney's fees. It's a huge hammer, but that's got to be filed within 1 year of the bad faith occurring. So, you know, attorneys have to be on top of what they're doing. Attorneys have to be there. Martin, we got to go to break, buddy.
Take care.
It was nice talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tom about his auto accident. In the meantime, we'll be right back. Paul Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Brad Pollock, Rob Brogan in the studio. You can call us. We have some open lines. You can call us at 303-713-8255. Let me say it a little slower. 303-713-8255. Or in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. If you call us, we're going to talk to you. We're going to talk to you about your problems, your legal questions. And if we can't get to you on the air, we get you off the air. If we can't answer your question on the air, we talk to you off the air. Right now, we have Tom from Morrison wants to talk about an automobile accident. Tom, how you doing?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
My son was working for a company that required him to do quite a bit of driving in a van.
Okay.
And the other day he was navigating a construction zone, and a woman stopped in front of him, and he wasn't able to, and hit her pretty hard. Well, he ended up with, I'm pretty sure it's a careless driving ticket.
All right.
And he is concerned that if he, pleads to this ticket, that it's going to, show up on his record. And if he decides not to work for this company anymore, but goes to another one where he's required to drive, it's going to, affect his ability to do that.
So
what is, in your opinion, what's the best way to handle that type of situation?
I don't, you don't know, when you go from employer to employer, you're not certain why or why not they're going to hire you, whether a careless driving ticket is really that important to the employer if it's one within, let's just say, it's the only ticket within 5 years.
How old's your son?
26.
What general kind of work does he do?
He is a locksmith.
A locksmith?
Yes.
Okay, so he works for a locksmith company.
Yes.
Have they indicated that his job's in jeopardy?
He has a workman's comp claim in because he got hurt a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But they gave him another van and put him back out on the road, but he doesn't know if, because of the comp claim that they can't let him go. He said it's kind of a hostile environment right now, comments being made about him and stuff.
Right, and that can happen. They're not, the law states that an employer is not allowed to fire an individual for filing a work comp claim. They can't take any retaliatory action. But what they do is they start writing them up for being 2-3 minutes late, saying they're not doing their job properly. I mean, there's ways to get rid of employees in Colorado. And although we know it's because of the work comp claim, they create different reasons to get rid of them.
Tom, what area did your of town did your son get the ticket? Do you know what jurisdiction is handling it?
That I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to speak with him yet. I'm getting all my info secondhand from my wife.
Okay, I want to talk to your son. Okay, because first of all, he should not just plead to the careless driving. Yeah, we should. We should get him a lawyer who's going to go down and talk to the either city attorney or district attorney about what happened and discuss it and see if that can't be maybe placed on deferred or if it can't be reduced or something can't be done. Okay.
Okay.
Because you do want to save that record if you can. While you're doing it, you want to make sure that you see what you can do to minimize the effect of the accident. It's a mistake he made. And he's obviously paying for the mistake. He's going to pay for the mistake. He's hurt himself. We're going to want to go over that with him. Some companies will look at driving record if they have drivers. I know that a number of the there's plumbing companies and electrical companies out there that if you have a ticket, it affects whether or not they'll hire you or whether or not they'll let you drive or whether or not you have to be the person riding in the vehicle rather than driving. So I think we're going to want to do that. Can we get your number and you talk to your son, see if he wants us involved? We're not going to charge him. We'll just talk to him about what can happen.
Okay.
But let us get your number and call you during the week. And, I don't know when he has to appear in court, but don't let him appear in court yet until he talks to us, okay?
Okay.
And we'll talk to him and give him some ideas on what he can do.
Okay, excellent.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're going to go to Fred next. You can call us at 303-713-8255, or if you're in Steamboat at 970-457-1009. Right now we're going to talk to Fred. Fred, you have a question about products liability?
Yes, I do. First, I want to say you have a great show. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
This is a product liability question, but from the standpoint of a manufacturer. My wife and I are retired, and 4 years ago we had a need for a product, and we couldn't find it, so we made it. And it reminds us to lock our car every time we get in and out of the car. We've been using it for 4 years, and it works great. As you know, carjacking, stolen cars, and stolen car contents are a result of cars not being locked. We'd like to market our device, but the problem is that one of the components in the device It does not work in certain situations, in complete darkness, very low levels of ambient light, artificial lighting, some artificial lighting, and some underground garages. So it's not malfunctioning, it's just not operative. So we're concerned if we do try to market it, how we shield ourselves from lawsuit from the inoperability factor.
Well, you know, the main thing you're going to be able to do, first of all, have you found somebody to help you market it and to do the product?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay.
I'm thinking of trying to, you know, do it online.
Okay, and that's fine. Have you copyrighted or trademarked or protected?
No, I haven't. That's another issue.
All right, and I'm going to want to talk to you off the air, so we will get your number. There's a man by the name of Justin Gilliland, who's a patent and copyrights attorney that I know very well. He used to work for us as a law clerk as he was going through law school. He has great experience, and I'll get you hooked up with him to just go over the basics of knowing what you need to know. So we'll
Great.
Talk to you off the air on that.
Okay.
As far as the product itself, and here's what you got, Fred. You must be able to, and you must identify the disclaimers in the product inserts in the packets that you give.
Okay.
If you have a product that it works and it's a good product, and this sounds like a good product. As a matter of fact, it sounds like a very good product. But if it has some areas where it doesn't work, you need to give appropriate notice. And in something like this, you couldn't give a big enough notice. And that means you have to have a package insert that goes with the product. It has to specifically identify where it won't work, when it won't work. To me, I would have that in bold lettering. I'd have it in caps. I'd have it right there up front.
Right.
And make sure people know that this is the risk that they have and that you're not responsible if they don't pay attention to this risk. All right?
Right.
I think once you do that and once you make sure they've been placed on proper notice, you're fine. Because the whole idea in products cases and in products disclosure is make sure you clearly identify for the person what your product can do and what it can't do and what its limitations are.
I see. I was thinking that, but I wasn't sure if that would be sufficient. And obviously, we'd give a full refund if it didn't work enough for them, or if they had a lot of conditions that it didn't work and they didn't want it. So,
well, to all those people listening, if it's a dangerous condition, that's a little bit different. For instance, if you got a chainsaw and your product is dangerous because you don't have the proper guards on it, that's different. But the product you're talking about is one where you need to let people know this is why it doesn't work in this area or it doesn't work in these areas, and don't try and use it in these areas. Understand the limitations. And that's a whole different situation. So I think your product would work and your disclaimer would work, and I think you'd be protected.
Oh, great.
Okay, so let me get your name off the air and have you call. And, you know, I'm going to give you Justin's number off the air so you can give him a call and talk to him. He's an attorney. He works for a patent and trademark and copyright law firm. And so he can also talk to you about these limitations also and what you got to do.
All right, great.
But basically, Fred, I think you're on the right track and you're going to be just fine.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255, or if you're in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. We're going to talk to Tim now as a banking question. Tim, we got about a minute before we go to break, so let's get started and then hold you over the break. Do you mind?
No, that's fine.
Good. What can we do for you?
What it amounts to is we went to a large bank to open up a checking account. We did. And the bank said, okay, are you going to use a direct deposit? We said, well, we might. Okay, and they said, okay, if you're going to do that, you need to fill out this form. I'll give it to you now. You take it home, fill it out, send it back into us, or you can do it yourself, and that'll set it up. If we do it, it'll take about 6 weeks. That was August 3rd. On August 10th, my wife made a online inquiry into our regular bank, which we've had a direct deposit of her Social Security check for 11 years, and there was no deposit. So we called that bank and said, what's going on? There's no deposit. They said, hold on. They made a check in inquiries, and they said, we don't show any deposit anywhere, and we don't see anything pending. So we said, wait a minute, something's wrong. So we called the Social Security Administration, and they said, okay, and they went through the verification process, which took 20 minutes over the phone. And then they said, well, we show that there was a direct deposit paid, but not to that bank that you've been using for 11 years. It's to another bank. We said, okay, what bank is that? Sorry, we cannot tell you. Federal law does not allow us to communicate over the phone and tell you what bank your money's going to.
Okay, Tim, let's hold you right there and come right back. Okay. We do have to take this break right now, and we'll be right back,
yep.
All right?
Okay.
Thank you. You're listening to Bell and Paul Legal Show. Calls at 303-713-8255. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Bell and Paul Legal Show, 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat, 970-457-1009. We'll get to your calls in the order in which they came. If you call us and you can't talk to us on the line, but you would need some help, leave your number with Kevin. We'll call you during the week. We're going to talk to Tim in just a second, but we got to talk to Eric real quick about Caitlin's Restaurant. What's going on down at Caitlin's?
Hey, Eric, let me tell you, we got some specials that we're running for the week. Our breakfast special this week is going to be a pork chorizo breakfast burrito that comes with two scrambled eggs, your choice of our scratch-made red or green chili, and a side of hash browns. We're going to run that for breakfast all week. And our lunch special is going to be a carne asada enchiladas. Again, you can get our scratch-made red or green on that. Comes with rice and beans, lettuce, tomatoes, guacamole, sour cream, really good stuff. That's going to be the lunch special all week. And don't forget on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, every Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's only $7.99. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. And I know it looks a little foggy out there right now, but I think the forecast for the weekend is supposed to be pretty decent, so you can come on down. We're going to try to get that deck open. We got bottomless mimosas for $10. So come on down, enjoy all the things we have to offer at Caitlin's, and we can't wait to see you.
That deck sounds great, Eric.
Yeah, I think Sunday's supposed to be a really great day. Today's supposed to be decent, so we're going to give it every chance we can.
But I think I'm going to need one of your cinnamon rolls today.
So we got cinnamon grillers. They're really, really popular. We make our own icing that we slather onto those. So all kinds of good stuff to come check out down at Caitlin's Restaurant.
All right, buddy. Where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you later, Eric. Thank you. Get down to Caitlin's, folks. You'll love it every bite of the way. That's their slogan. You'll enjoy it. It's very good. We're going to go back to Tim. Tim, okay, it sounds like you lost your checks or your deposit. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, what it amounts to is a direct deposit per the Social Security Administration was a direct deposit made. But they wouldn't tell us or could by law where it was made. And remember, we haven't made any changes. We didn't direct any changes. So we called the big bank, the new big bank with the new checking account, and we said, did you guys change our direct deposit? We didn't fill any form. We talked to the same person that we used when we opened up the checking. Oh, absolutely not. We cannot do that. You have to fill the form out, sign it, send it in. It'll take 6 weeks. I said, okay, well, how about checking the account and see what the last deposit was? And then I hear, uh-oh, well, there is a direct deposit from Social Security Administration in this account, and I don't know, this is the woman speaking at the big bank, I don't know how this happened. So they went in and unilaterally changed our direct deposit without any input from us.
Yeah, they got a problem.
How did they get that information?
Pardon me?
How did they get that information?
Well, when you fill out for a checking account, they're going to have your Social Security number. They're going to have your address. They're
right.
Going to have everything.
Right. That's what they
do. It amounts to is I called other banks, including the old bank, and they said, there's no way. There's no way that anybody can do this. Well, they did it.
Amazing.
And I filed a complaint with SEC and got a complaint number in the whole nine yards, and I got an apology back from the big bank saying, yeah, we did it. But no one. Absolutely no one has answered the question, how did they pull this off? Because I called the Social Security Administration, and they go, we don't know how this has happened, because they must have forged the paperwork for you in order to get this done, because we wouldn't change a direct deposit unless we had paperwork. And I'm a pretty savvy financial guy, and I can tell you, this is not a question of somebody forgetting and filling out a piece of paperwork. We didn't do anything. They unilaterally did this. So my question is, can I sue?
Can you what?
Can I sue them?
Well, yeah, I think you can. Because obviously I think there's probably some forgery or some inappropriate conduct. It's going to take some more investigation. The question is going to be your damages, Tim. And the damages are going to be what's your harm? Every case requires whether or not somebody did something wrong, first of all, or a transgression, if they forged your name, if they took certain actions. And then the next question is, what are your damages resulting from what they did? Now, in this case, you've been without your money. Did they transfer the money back over to your old bank, or what'd they do?
No, what they did is, that's what they wanted to do. And I said, leave it there. I'm going to cancel the account, and then you can pay me. That's what I did.
Okay.
But what it amounts to is, it's the old story. You know, I'm just looking at what happens if there was a person out there that had auto pay and all kinds of stuff based on that direct deposit from the Social Security Administration, and they, because they went and changed the direct deposit, the poor people, had a nightmare on their hands.
Oh, sure. And let's just talk about how much time you've had to spend tracking this down. Let's talk about the time you've been without your money. Let's talk about the time that the fact that your money was diverted to another source. And we'd have to put that together as far as how much the damages are and what they are. And also, let's talk about the fact that still there hasn't been a full disclosure to you of everything that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
that's and believe me, the big bank, the office that we used, they couldn't believe it. I went in and I saw the manager. We just don't know how this happened. I said, well, somebody on the other line, on the other end of that computer, went in and changed our direct deposit, Social Security Administration, without our approval. And that's scary. I mean, let's take somebody that's 80 years old or something that has that, direct deposit, and then a lot of that money or most of that money is being auto-paid, and now they haven't got the money and they're not paying their bills. And,
It could have.
I agree with you 100%. And, what I want to do is, I don't know if you need my help or not, because it sounds like you've got yourself very competent and very capable of doing what you want to do. But I want to do is, I want to talk to you and get together and find out if we can find out how all this happened, what remedies might be available to you, and how we can proceed with it.
All right. Well, I'll give you my phone number off.
Okay.
Off air.
How about if we put you on hold, you can give your number and we'll call you this week, all right?
Okay. Yep. That's
Thanks,
fine.
Tim.
Thank you.
That's a good call, folks. So you have to understand, sometimes these things happen and you got to be able to be on top of them. You got to have pure knowledge of what's going on and be able to track down your own money. And so that can be a real problem. Let's talk to Joe right now. He wants to talk about the RICO law. Joe, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. For everybody listening out there, RICO is Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act. You got some problems with RICO law, Joe?
No, I just didn't understand it. A friend of mine was going through a thing, in a probate thing, actually with the Veterans Hospital.
Okay.
And he ended up contacting through some another guy that he was in the Army with, got him in hold of the Department of Justice.
Uh-huh.
And they put him a hold of an attorney in Illinois, and they're trying to, they want to sue this public administrator and this other person that was at the VA through the RICO, and they're talking three times damages. But does the attorney take a contingency fee off that? Or because the law, the way they explained to him in Colorado, the attorney's fees get paid, and then he gets three times his damages. Do you understand how that works? Or?
Right. The RICO laws were really put together in order to make it easier to prosecute organized crime. In the 70s, Congress passed it. And basically, RICO is a law that allows both criminal prosecution and civil prosecution and forfeiture.
Right. This is what's happened on this case is because they actually got organized crime tied to this law office out of the public administrator's deal, and then these two lawyers have successfully sued in Illinois and collected. But he wasn't sure if, you know, how long it's going to take. He's older, and he's afraid that it'll get tied up in court for the next 10 years. But I just didn't know, is the three times the damages going to be his award, or is the lawyer going to end up with that?
No, you can get attorney's fees on top of that three times the damages, right, Rob?
Yeah, that's correct. Shall cover threefold the damages and the cost of the suit, including reasonable attorney fees.
So the
entity... What happened, I guess, the people in Illinois found out that there was a public administrator in Arapahoe County suit under RICO, but she used her law insurance or something just to pay off and make it go away under a civil thing. I mean, it was like 2 years ago after there was a big article in the paper about her.
Well, Jefferson County's had a lot of problems. Evidently, there's been, and I think it extended over to a couple of other counties also, where you had some people who were involved and some attorneys who were carrying out some improper acts.
The people in Illinois said there was staged litigation, and then they were buying properties from, like, the one case involved a public administrator out of Adams County having a PR in a unsupervised estate, and then they passed it on to the public administrator in Jefferson County, and then he sold it to the other public administrator's family. But they're kind of tied together like to a class action, but this other guy just wants them to do it his case alone and get a settlement.
Somebody here in Colorado?
Oh yeah, it's right out of Jefferson County.
I'll tell you, Joe.
He had hired attorneys out of Illinois because I successfully sued, and it involved a judge in Illinois.
So that's good information. We got to go to break now. Can we talk to you off the air and find out more about this?
Sure.
Okay. Let me have Kevin get your number, and I want to talk to you more about it, and maybe bring you on next week and talk more about it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. In the meantime, we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk to two bills, one from Lakewood and one from Westminster. Welcome back to the Bell and Paul Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We're going to take your calls in the order in which they came, except one thing, Joe. I think we might have lost you. And we were talking about those RICO laws and what's going on in some of the probate cases. Really do want to talk to you off the air this week. So if we lost you and you didn't get a chance to give Kevin your call or your number, please call back. Give Kevin your number so we can give you a call. We're going to follow up, or we're going to talk to Bill. Bill, you have a follow-up with us on the gun range laws?
Yes. Hi. How's it going?
Good. Great. How are you doing?
Okay. Just sitting here with the volume off, watching the highlights of the Super Bowl.
Nice.
That's a good thing to watch. Well, I think we're going to be watching those for a year now.
He was coming out with that Superman shirt. He got those little green glow-in-the-dark things, you know, for walking.
And what about his MVP cleats?
Yeah, and pulling them out at the end of the game, that was if it was kryptonite.
Well, I'm born and raised here in Colorado, so you know where my feelings are.
Well, I've lived here most of my life too, so
yeah.
Anyway, so I can't remember if I called back or not on that issue with the gun ranges.
What do you got for us?
The driver's license at the gun ranges, remember?
Right.
Called up.
Right. I remember all about it. Have you tried telling him that you want things redacted or blacked out, and what's going on?
Well, no, I did for myself. One range, and I have no problem showing him my driver's license when I go there. I just don't want it up on the wall. And so I made a photocopy and laminated it, and they kind of cringe at it. The first time I used it, it was over in Wheat Ridge, and there was a Wheat Ridge cop there, and the guy at the range goes to the cop, "Well, what do you think?" He goes, "I don't care as long as he doesn't use it to drive, you know." So what do you guys think about the legal part about putting your driver's license up on the wall?
Well, here's what I think, and here's what I've been able to go with, Bill, and I don't have that information right in front of me right now, but here's what I think. I think, first of all, the people who operate the gun ranges do not have to put your driver's license up there. I do think they have to show that they did a proper ID in the event you all of a sudden have a law enforcement wanting to know who's out there shooting guns and who's got.
Yeah, and I got no problem with that. That's fine, okay. You know.
The second thing is I think that really, and you've seized on something very important, I think the gun range owners and operators could have some potential liability in leaving that kind of personal information hanging on a wall. Because I can tell you something. We used to have a thing where we would do depositions and we'd go into the defense attorney's offices, and the first thing they'd want is the driver's license of our client. And I tell them, no, you're not getting my client's driver's license. There's personal information that you're not entitled to have. And so I think you've got something that's important here, that they're not really entitled to just be publicizing all the driver's license information.
Sure, because I don't know the guys, people that are working at the range. You know, identity crisis, theft, it happened to my daughter. Someone did it to her. That's nothing but a pain in the neck.
Right.
One time years ago, I misplaced my wallet. I had no clue where it was at, and I had to cancel. It took me a week or so to find it. I had to get all new.
That's a nightmare.
I had to cancel all my credit because I don't know where I lost it.
And I don't know of any law. I have been unable to find a law that says those driver's licenses must be posted so that everybody can see them.
Sure, that's okay. My gripe. You know, I got no problem showing it. What do they need it up on the wall for? After you show it to them.
That's right. And so I think there's some potential liability there. Now, have I been able to find a case or anything that's been pursued? Have I been able to find anything that's happened where anybody's filed a lawsuit to stop that? No, I haven't been able to.
Right. Well, who's going to go through the trouble?
Nobody, as long as, you know, but I do think it'd be wise, and if I were advising a gun range and I was talking to those owners, I'd be saying, look, get the driver's license, redact personal information, redact the information that shouldn't be there, and get it off. And don't, if you want to post a driver's license. Now, the only reason I can think that they post a driver's license is it's easier to be able to show, yes, we have the personal information concerning this person, we posted it. And here's the person that's shooting, and it goes with, you know, here's the ID that goes with the person that's right there shooting.
But see, you know, most ranges, you fill out a form that they put up on the wall with your driver's license. Why isn't that good enough? You know, show them the ID. I got no problem showing. Just don't need it to hang up there.
I agree with you 100%.
That's just, you know, I was just curious what you guys had come up with.
I found no reason, nothing that goes on it, but you know what? I'm going to put Courtney, one of the lawyers in our office, I'm going to have her research it again this week, and listen to us next week. We'll tell you what we got.
Hey, well, this is kind of early in the morning, you know. I'm retired.
Yeah, leave your number. We'll call you unless you know what we got.
And heard you guys on, so I figured let me give you guys a call. Okay, hey, well, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Take care, Bill. Thanks for listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're going to go to Bill in Westminster. Mark, if we can't get to you, we'll take you off the air. Bill, we've got a couple of minutes. Tell us about your question about your will.
Hey, my aunt died last year and had left me some money. And anyway, the executor of the will, who's my nephew, was supposed to distribute the money last November. But I didn't get any check or anything from him, and I've been trying to call him about 100 times. And, you know, of course, now I can't get a hold of him. Nobody answers the phone, and I don't know what to do.
Where's the will being probated? What county?
It's in, actually, New Jersey.
In New Jersey. You can't get anything out of the executor?
Nope.
Okay.
You know, and before I call him, you know, and right away, I got 2 phone numbers because, you know, they're part of our family, and... You know when you're being blown off when you call 20 times in 2 weeks and nobody calls you back or anything, so.
Yeah, something's really bad there. Here's the thing. They're supposed to be giving accountings. They're supposed to be giving certain inventories of the estate to the court. They should have opened up and started probating the will. They should have opened up an action in the probate court or in whatever might be the civil court in New Jersey. What we've got to do is we've got to help you on this. We're going to have to call you off the air. We're going to get the name and the number and the people that are involved. We're going to call the local authorities out there to see what we can find out about what's happened, whether an estate's even been opened up, because that's one of the problems.
Is there any time limit that I have to do anything, or?
Well, if you get once a full accounting has been given, yes. But right now, because the executor of the estate isn't giving you an accounting, isn't explaining what's going on, isn't doing anything, no time periods are being triggered. Now, if you just sit back and do nothing based on the fact that somebody's died and you had a will and, you know, they're probating the estate and you do nothing and years go by, I presume there's going to be a latches argument which says, you know, you sat on your rights and you didn't assert them. But based right now, you know, we don't know if the executor is trying to wind up the estate, is trying to pay bills, is in some kind of period, because the New Jersey is a different set of laws, but is in some kind of period where they're waiting for creditors to make their claims. If they have creditors making claims, we don't know any of what's going on with that. So,
right.
So we're in a situation where we got to learn, but if you got an executor who's not responding, we got to set that executor up with his proper letters to show they're not doing their job. Bill, that's our music to be out. Let me put you on hold, get your number, and call you this week, okay?
Thank you.
Your bet. You've been listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're here every single Saturday morning for you to answer your questions. Thank you for all your calls. They're important to us. As I told you, if we can't answer them on the phone, we answer them off the phone and we give you answers. We'll call you this week. All of you be safe. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.